Hey folks, just a little content note for this episode off the top. We're getting into some kind of heavy stuff about depression and other mental illness stuff, so we do talk about self-harm, a little bit about suicidal thoughts. If you need to skip this episode, totally cool. We understand. Thanks for taking care of yourself. Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex blogger, a sex journalist, and I have 3 diagnosed mental illnesses. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I'm a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I too am mentally ill. Go team!
Hooray! We're doing such a good job at life. I'm actually genuinely quite proud of us. But we're not just telling you this for no reason. We're not just announcing our diagnoses just to say a bunch of long words. We are doing a show about sex and how it interplays with depression and other mental illnesses, and also like other illnesses in general, because I know that the ways that I have sex when I'm depressed are like similar in some ways to the ways I have sex when I'm like very sick with like the flu or something, if at all. So Bex, what tends to happen to your sex drive when you're depressed or sick or having some kind of illness flare up?
I think it tends to drop off a little bit. I feel, depending on how my depression manifests. So the diagnosis that impacts this the most, I think, I'm diagnosed bipolar 2, which means I'll have moments of something called hypomania and depression. A lot of folks are familiar with depression. For me, it tends to manifest as a feeling of, like, numbness and just exhaustion with the world and apathy and disinterest. It's very rarely sadness. Occasionally it's hopelessness. Mm-hmm. But I, like, it doesn't feel sad to me, generally. Mm-hmm. And it'll be laced with, like, feelings of dread and stuff around anxiety sometimes as well. So when I'm in that place, I'm apathetic about most things, including sex. I don't stop jerking off, because that's fun. and I think if I had, like, an established partner, I don't know that I'd, like, stop having sex with them, but I am apathetic about pursuing it. Mm-hmm. I also, a lot of times in that place, I occasionally disassociate as well, which is a feeling of being out of my body and disconnected from my body, and having my body touched in those moments can feel really, really unsettling. Mm-hmm. And that's not super great. Alternatively, though, the other side of things is hypomania, which is a kind of less intense form of mania. So, like, on the far end of the spectrum, mania can be really intense, but generally what I experience is hypomania, which is a little bit less of an extreme case, but it's elevated mood, increased risk-taking behavior.
Like feeling powerful, feeling capable.
Yeah. Like you can do anything.
Yeah.
And like inflated sense of self as well. Like mm-hmm. You feel great. Like you're a fucking superhero.
yeah.
And also for me, it feels like my brain is on fast forward and I can't mm-hmm. slow down. And it feels really overwhelming and really uncomfortable for me. Mm-hmm. So in that case, a lot of times I'll crave more sex or riskier sex or things like that. And interestingly, I've noticed now, because I am medicated, since starting my meds, I found kind of this third, like, other state that I get into that feels like a hybrid of the two. So I get a lot of the negative thoughts that come with depression and the feelings of hopelessness and helplessness and dread and anxiety and all of that, but it's on fast forward, like I'm hypomanic.
That's fine.
And I get stuck in the thought spirals like I'm hypomanic, and I have all of the energy like I'm hypomanic. Like, when I'm depressed, I just lay in bed because I'm tired.
Yeah.
And I'm not motivated to do anything. But when I'm in this other place, I have all of the depression feelings, and I just want to do all of the things, and I have no idea what to do with all of those feelings. So that's a place, again, where I'll say, where I'll crave sex. And also kink. And I'm sure we'll probably talk a little bit about this.
Just a little bit.
But I'll often crave kink as an alternative to self-harming behaviors. And yeah, in that kind of mid-space. And when I'm in that space where I'm craving, like, this riskier sex or really intense kink or things like that, and I know that it's coming from this place of my mental illness, I'll often either loop a friend in to kind of bounce my ideas off of, like someone like you, or just kind of really reflect on, okay, but what ways, like, what do I want to do, and what ways can I manifest that in a way that is healthier and safe for everyone involved? Because, like, in those moments, I wouldn't do pickup play kink stuff, because I know how emotionally fraught that is. To be approaching kink in that space, and I would only be doing it with someone that I'm, like, I super trust, and I would still want to sit down, generally when I'm in any sort of, because a lot of this mental health stuff feels like an altered state to me.
Yeah, totally.
And in the same way I'd give someone context if I had drank or smoked or, you know, done any sort of other drugs or whatever before going into a scene, I'll generally also give someone the cliff notes of if I'm in this whatever altered state from my mental illness, if I'm depressed or manic or whatever, and talk about what that feels like and the implications of that for me, because I feel like it's important for them to be able to consent.
Absolutely, yeah.
To that, like, although it's something that I'm experiencing in my own head, it's a more intense scene than they might realize they're signing up for, right? If I'm looking for this beating to be cathartic, and they're just like, woo, spanking scene, like, those are two very different energies, and I want them to be prepared for whatever place I'm gonna be in.
Yeah, that reminds me of, a common sort of tenet of kink is that it should be safe, sane, and consensual, which has been criticized a lot in recent years in my communities, mostly because of the word sane, because it implies that if you have mental illnesses, you cannot or should not participate in kink, and that is not my experience, and I also think that's super ableist and unfair. Like, if I had to be sane every single time I participate in kink, I would do it very rarely, and it's really important to me. But I do think that, going off of what you're saying, like, a way that you can be quote-unquote sane or at least safe and consensual in your play and, like, risk-aware is to make people aware of, like, what you're going through mentally. And I think that's true even if you don't have a mental illness. Like, you still might be having an off day, and I still think that's something you should probably communicate to your partner.
Yeah, absolutely. In the same way you might be like, listen, my shoulder's a little sore. Maybe we shouldn't do a TK. Maybe we'll do this other tie. Also being like, hey, my brain's a little sore, maybe avoid XYZ things, or maybe just know I might need to tag out, or I might start crying, or whatever that looks like.
Yeah, because me bursting into tears during a scene, I feel like certain partners, that might seem pretty normal to them, but if they are not, like, aware that that's where I'm at, and if it just seems to happen totally out of the blue, that could be totally scary, and so they need to know that.
Yeah, absolutely. Because if I burst into tears in a scene, we have an issue.
That's a 5-alarm fire, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. and, like, the fact that we have to give our partners those that context, right?
Yeah. The reason I asked about libido and sex drive is that common wisdom is that those things tend to decrease when you're depressed and increase when you're hypomanic. Like, mania and hypomania are both associated with hypersexuality. And I've actually, like, received a fair amount of that stigma since being diagnosed bipolar 2, which I also have, because sometimes people see that, like, I'm a sex writer and also have bipolar, and they're like, oh, there must be a connection there. Like, they've said kind of, like, stigmatizing things to me about, like, clearly you are just, like, this into sex because you're manic, which is, like, hilarious to me because I'm, like, fairly rarely manic. And when I am manic, I don't really pursue sex in a way that I would consider risky or excessive because of my another diagnosis I have, which is social anxiety disorder. So they kind of temper each other in a weird way. But one thing I do notice when I'm manic is that I tend to pursue like romantic connections more so. Like I used to like obsessively swipe through Tinder when I was manic, and I think it was more so because I was looking for romantic stimulation. Like I really wanted to go on a date. I really wanted that excitement and like to be able to sort of like show off to a new person and flirt with a new person, because that felt very exciting to me, which like currently I'm in more of a depressed phase and the thought of that is so exhausting to me. Like that just seems like so much work. I'm like, why would anyone ever do that? But as far as depression goes, like, I always found it interesting to hear from people whose libido, like, goes away or is lessened during that time, because I don't feel like mine is. I think that I'm always a fairly high libido person, but if anything, I do skew more when I'm depressed toward the, like, responsive desire end of the spectrum, which, if you don't know what that is, you should go read Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. But basically, she talks about the difference between responsive desire and spontaneous desire, with spontaneous desire being exactly what it sounds like a lightning bolt to the genitals. Like, you just want sex out of the blue, whereas responsive desire is more like sexual stimuli happen to you, like you watch porn or someone says something dirty to you in a sexy situation or whatever, and you start to get turned on after that. And I find that, like, I can have just as much sex when I'm depressed as I do when I'm manic or more normal feeling, but I tend to only want it with trusted people when I'm depressed, and I tend to need them to do a little bit of extra work to turn me on. So it's cool to know that about myself.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious. My libido has definitely dropped off more as a part of my transition, because a part of, like, discovering and learning about my gender has been, which is hilarious. I started tea and that, but fine, whatever. But just like more recently, when I first started tea, it peaked because testosterone does that. But more recently, it's tapered off a little bit. And I think part of it is that trust stuff. And part of it is, past couple of weeks, I was hypomanic for most of the end of last year, and going into this year has been kind of a depressive episode. And I'm curious to see, during my transition, I've also gotten a better grasp of my mental health and gotten a better understanding and been more easily able to identify the times that I'm depressed. So I don't super have a correlation necessarily, because as my libido's gone down with transition and having a clearer understanding of what I want my body to look like and realizing it's not quite there yet, I've become less comfortable in my body, even though I know it's a temporary thing. But doing that means sex has become a lot more vulnerable for me and a lot harder for me, because I'm at a place where with clothes on, I obviously the idea of passing is problematic. Not getting into it. But with clothes on, I more or less pass 60 to 70% of the time at this point. And with clothes off, I don't. So it's become much more vulnerable, which is a much more harder place to access when I'm depressed.
Yeah.
So I don't know how much of it is depression and how much of it is an intersection of my transness with depression. And I don't know what my sex drive will look like in a year or so when I'm at a better place with my body. Which I will be. Like, this is puberty. Yeah. No one feels good about their body when they're 15, let's be honest.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me, because my experience with depression is that if there's a thing that you routinely worry about or are scared of or anything like that, it will come up when you're depressed. I have things that come up over and over again that don't really bother me that much when I'm feeling okay, but that come up a lot when I'm depressed. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine earlier today about this, and she's a cis woman, and she was telling me that when she's depressed, her body insecurities come up a lot more, and so she has a hard time, like, having people go down on her or, like, having sex with the lights on and stuff like that that, like, would tend to flare up those insecurities. And that felt really real to me because, like, For example, if I'm like having sex while I'm super depressed and I start thinking about a thing that makes me sad for whatever reason, like I start thinking about how I'll probably never live with a partner or get married and I'll just be alone forever, and I just go down that thought spiral, which is like not something I need to be thinking about during sex or during masturbation, but like that's just kind of where my mind goes
when I'm depressed. Be alone forever. Forget about this dude with his dick in me. I am alone and will be forever.
But this is how ridiculous depression is, right? Because it lies to you. And like when I used to go on Tinder hookups and stuff, often like I would arrange these hookups while I was manic, and then I would go on them when I was feeling less manic because time had elapsed. And I might be like in the middle of a hookup and start to think about, well, like this sex isn't that good, and I'm never going to meet a partner who I have good sex with, and I'm going to be alone forever, and I'm going to die alone. And I just go down these horrible thought spirals, and that's when I start to cry in front of Tinder dudes. It's not great.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, that's a big problem I have with dating is like, I might be vaguely excited about someone, but I hate planning stuff that... I used to hate planning stuff far in advance because I could never measure where my brain would be at.
Yeah.
Now that I'm medicated, the so bad I can't leave the house days are less frequent. Mm-hmm. And I can at least fake it till I make it, generally, for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think one of the other issues is... For me, sex is always going to be vulnerable and somewhat performative because of my gender stuff.
Yeah.
And depressed sex is also super vulnerable and performative because I'm so apathetic about everything.
Mm-hmm.
It can be, and I have no poker face, let's be honest, about anything in life ever. I just don't. So it's really hard to not look bored all the time when I'm depressed.
Yeah.
Which is awkward when someone's dick's in you. So, the combination of having to be vulnerable, having to perform my gender, and having to perform happiness, interest, mental stability, I don't know, whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
Just feels like a lot.
Yeah.
So I don't know... What, and, you know, all of this is because I haven't ever, slash in a long time, had sex with someone that I felt like that super comfortable being vulnerable around. At least not recently, since, like, where I'm at with my gender and my mental illness. So I don't know what that would manifest like if I was in, like, a long-term partnership with someone.
Yeah.
And I'm curious what my sex drive would look like with that. Mm-hmm. But right now, it's my sex drive with, like, strangers and casual partners.
Right.
Which, for the most part, my depressed brain is like, nah, B, shit. Let's fucking work.
Yeah, it is funny how that can influence you so much. Because, like, I've definitely had periods, too, where, like, I didn't have a partner and I was just like hooking up with people on Tinder or whatever. And I was like, wow, where did my sex drive go? And it's like, actually, I just wasn't that excited about anyone or about going out or about myself or my own desirability. And it's like, that really affects things.
Yeah.
So like kink is really useful in these situations for like a lot of reasons. But one of them for me is that a lot of kink acts are things where it's like socially acceptable for me to be crying the whole time. Because, like, if someone's just, like, fucking me in a very vanilla manner or, like, going down on me and I'm just weeping the entire time, that's, like, certain partners would be cool with that, but that's a bit of a look. It's a bit of a choice. And so, like, if they're spanking me, that's kind of easier for that because if I burst into tears, it's a little bit more normal. It's a little bit more comprehensible to most people and I feel less weird about it. So that's one of the ways that I use kink when I'm depressed. What are some of the ways that you like to use it?
I really enjoy a lot of the, like, DS aspects of it, especially, like, around nurturing DS, or around just, like, making me get my shit together.
Yeah.
Super, super encouraging, super valuable for, like, that sort of support network.
Mm-hmm.
But also, and like content note, we had a content note at the top of the show, but we'll say it again because we're going to start talking about some self-harm stuff. Mm-hmm. So just like skip ahead if that your brain's not in a place where you can hear that right now. But for me, I will often crave to kind of externalize this like inner turmoil feeling that I have, especially when I'm in that middle place where I have all of this energy and all of this anger and all of this, like all of these negative feelings swirling around. A lot of times I'll look for some sort of outlet and something like I can see or feel on my body that makes it feel more real.
Mm-hmm.
And my not great outlets for that have historically been self-harm. Mm-hmm. Which is not necessarily a great thing to do. At least my therapist tells me. So I will often also crave kink experiences in that moment. Beatings and masochism in general. I haven't spent a lot of time pursuing that, again, because this is something I would do with someone that I super trust, and someone who has, like, a lot of experience in kink, and a lot of experience in kink with me, and can read me really well, and is comfortable, like, playing in those edges, and that's not an opportunity I've had come up yet, but I do think it could be really valuable for me, even just having another person present for that.
Mm-hmm.
And having another person not in whatever headspace I'm in.
Yeah.
And another person going, okay, these are the things you're craving, and these are the ways we can manifest that are safely. These are the ways that we can manifest that and have it done safely. And also provide care and comfort for you around this.
Yeah, this is a question that I've spent a lot of time with, the question of whether kink can be self-harm and like where the line is there, because like both personally and in a piece I was writing once about spanking and mental health for the establishment, I talked to both like my own therapist as well as like a therapist I was interviewing for that piece about this question. And what all of them said was basically, it really depends on how you approach it, but probably it's not really self-harm if it's with like a good conscientious partner, because they are going to probably keep you safe if they're good. They're going to supervise you. They're going to only give you as much as you can reasonably take. And you have someone there with you basically to keep you safe. And it's interesting, like I've been doing more of this in the past year or so with my partner who is long distance. And at times when like I really can't handle my feelings and I'm wanting to self-harm, I often do self-impact with spanking tools, crops and paddles and whatnot. And it's really interesting how like physically the thing I'm doing when we do impact play over the phone is the same physical action, but my partner is there telling me exactly how hard to hit myself and exactly when to hit myself, and also telling me when to stop. And so we're doing this in this way that's like safer and more supervised, and like I get proper aftercare, and he's saying nice things to me while we're doing it to kind of like drown out my, you know, self-hating thoughts. And I'm crying usually, but it's like a cathartic type of crying. So I mean, I do want to say, like, obviously we are not professionals, this is not advice, this is not telling you to do this, but there have definitely been times when I was so at my wit's end with depression or anxiety that I really didn't know what else to do other than pain, because there really wasn't anything else that was going to like quiet my brain down. At least that's how I felt at the time. And it's like certain kink activities like hypnosis or something like that, like certain kink activities, you really are kind of alone with your brain and you have a lot of time and space to think about things and focus on the bad thoughts that are in your brain. Whereas with pain, I find like there's nothing in my mind except I have to get through this if the pain is severe enough. And so it can be really useful for that for me.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that's valuable for this, and it kind of came up for me when you were talking about it, is I think partners of people specifically with depression, but like mental illness in general, often it feels like they're standing on the outside trying to pull you out, And an experience like that feels a lot more like them sitting in it with you.
Yes.
And that's super valuable, and yeah. super intimate, but, like, having someone who can just be there with you while you have these feelings,
yes.
and not being alone in that moment, I think is a big difference as far as safety, but also just as far as, like, mental safety. Like, I think it's just healthier having someone with you in that yeah. moment.
If I may cite two of my favorite thinkers on this subject, there is Kate Bornstein, who is the trans author and hero of the world, who wrote this great book called Hello, Cruel World, and it is a book of alternatives to suicide. Getting a little dark here, folks, but, I mean, it's things that you can do instead of suicide if that's what's on your mind, which I think is a really useful tool because, in my experience, like, often moments of extreme depressive desperation seem like they're taking over your whole world and they're so huge and they'll never end, but they actually do end. Like, you can't stay in a state of, like, high desperation for more than, I don't know, 20, 30 minutes, in my experience. It will get
mine lasts a lot longer than that, but it does go away.
Well, I mean, like, the acute state of, like, you know, I have certain acute states where I'm, like, actively, like, crying and, like, breathing so fast that I don't know how I'm gonna, like, survive the next minute or whatever. So, like, that mm-hmm. state of, like, acute, like, distress doesn't last a super long time because, like, biochemically it can't. And so if you can find something to do for that length of time, then sometimes it can help, even if it's just a distraction tactic. And so, like, kink, sex, all that kind of stuff can be useful in that regard, as long as you're, like, you know, being safe and responsible. The other thinker I wanted to talk about was Carly Boyce, who is a Toronto-based person who teaches this great workshop also on suicide intervention that I just went to recently. And one of the things she really said that stuck with me, is about harm reduction around, like, self-harm stuff. And she said, if you're having, like, an urge to self-harm, maybe tell yourself, if I still want to do that in 15 minutes, I can. Or if I try two other things and they're both not helping, then I can do the self-harm thing. And those tips have been so helpful for me because, like, often if I do a couple other things or just wait a little while, I don't still want to do it. But, like, sometimes some of those things are kink things, and I think that's okay. Like, a lot of people turn to, like, really intense sensations, like intense exercise or, like risky, like, daredevil-type behaviors kind of in lieu of self-harm. And I think, like, kink is sort of an extreme sport. It's sort of a physically mm-hmm. and emotionally intense activity. And so if you can get kind of that intense sensation that you're looking for, that self-harm might also give you, then it can kind of, like, you know, distract you from that less healthy desire.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about masturbation? How does that change for you when you're going through stuff?
I don't super know that it does. Yeah, I don't know. It becomes more, like, perfunctory, more I just get off and then go to bed kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Than it does, like, this, like, joyful self-exploration. but honestly, like, that doesn't happen super often generally for me anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know, jerking off's boring in my life, I guess. Shit. That did not sound engaging.
Yeah. Well, I feel similarly. It becomes more perfunctory. I do notice also that, like, I feel really, like, grossed out at the thought of engaging with my own body in any kind of direct way a lot of times when I'm depressed. So I'll often rely on, like, much more indirect ways, like using a magic wand through my pajama pants or whatever, like, just to gain some sort of distance from my body and from what I'm doing, because it can feel sort of gross to me to get, like, all up in there. Mm-hmm. I also tend to rely much more on stimulus, like porn and erotica and stuff, I think because I really need to be able to get out of my own head in order to experience pleasure and arousal, because if I don't do that, I'm just stuck in my head with my terrible self-loathing thoughts. So I need to displace myself from my brain in order to get turned on.
Yep.
Yeah. So speaking about having sex with partners while you're in this state, what would be your advice for someone who has a partner who experiences depression or whatever, and wants to be a supportive partner while having sex with them in that state?
I would talk to them both while they're in that state and while they're not, and yes, ask them to explain that experience. Mm-hmm. Because the thing about this, they very distinctly feel like altered states to me.
Yes.
There is a gradient, you know, maybe a scale of 1 to 10, whatever. Mm-hmm. And there are gray areas around the fringes, but if I'm in the depths of it, it's no different than talking to me, like, when I'm drunk or something like that, right? I know how it feels. I'm feeling it. I'm in it. But I have a really hard time finding the language for it. Because I have that apathy.
Sorry, to extend that metaphor, I think it's also important to note that because it is an altered state, you might not be super capable of consenting to things that you haven't done before. Right. Or that you don't typically do. And so, like, I tend to fall back on stuff that I've done a lot of times with a particular partner or in general, stuff that I know works for me and does not upset me, because it is like being drunk or high. Like, you can't really, you know, renegotiate in the middle of that scene. It doesn't tend to go well.
Absolutely. And yeah, I know what it feels like, but a lot of times it feels like thinking through molasses. Mm-hmm. Every thought is just moving slowly, and it's so much work. So when someone says, "What are you feeling right now?" I don't always have the language, right? Mm-hmm. But I'm in that place. And then if you ask me a couple of weeks later, when I'm out of that place, I can't remember with the same precision what it feels like, right? Yeah. I can't put myself back there. Mm-hmm. I suddenly have the language, you know, everything feels like it's working a lot better. I no longer feel like I have these blocks, but I also can't access that place, mm-hmm, in the same way. Or if I try, sometimes I'll bring myself back, right? Mm-hmm. By thinking, if I'm thinking too much in that place, I can bring myself back into that place. Or start to. Mm-hmm. So talking to them about it when they're in both of these different places and kind of finding an idea of what that feels like for them, mm-hmm, I think you're going to get a better understanding. Mm-hmm. And also talking to them about what feels good in those moments and what you can do to be helpful in those moments, because it is going to vary wildly from person to person. I mean, even just in this conversation, right? You've wanted to talk about crying during sex, and I fully do not, right? Some people might be more comfortable. Some people might feel really lonely and want to be hugged and comforted and held close in those moments. I want to be left the fuck alone.
Yeah.
Like, if anything, sit in the same room as me, maybe. Mm-hmm. But a lot of times, I don't want to be touched. I feel like I'm going to crawl out of my own skin. Mm-hmm. But it totally depends on the person, right?
Yeah.
So I think having those conversations is the first biggest step.
Yeah, I agree. I think it can be useful to keep records of what has worked and what has not if you're in, like, a consistent thing. Like, mm-hmm, my partner has quite a good sense now of, like, what I need in those various states, and I think it's because he's, like, paid really close attention. And we also tend to have debriefs, like, the day after, like, via text, like, what did you think of that last night, what worked, what didn't, which is good because, like, I might still be, you know, depressed or anxious or whatever it was, but I'm not, like, acutely usually in that stage. Like, it's not usually as intense or quite the same as it was when it was happening. So I have a little bit more distance and can say, like, it was helpful when you did this, but this made me sadder, you know. So sort of calibrate that. I would also add, in terms of thinking of it like an altered state, I think that's a really useful way of looking at it. And for me, it can sometimes be like subspace in the sense that if I'm actively having a problem, like if I'm actively getting upset or something in a scene due to being depressed, I might not be good at communicating that. So it can be useful to use check-in questions, safe words. Like, you can ask someone, like, what color are you? And they can say red, yellow, or green. And that's really good. And you might need to do that more than you usually would if they're depressed, because they might have a really hard time getting those words out. Like, I know when I'm depressed, I often assume nobody likes me, nobody wants to hear from me, nobody cares about what I have to say, nobody wants me to bug them or impose on them or be a burden. And so, like, even if I'm sort of struggling in a scene, it might be difficult for me to say that. And so these check-in questions are really useful because they communicate, like, you want to hear what they have to say and you're interested and you're paying attention and you're listening. I also think I was reminded when you said about how, like, you want people to leave you the fuck alone in that state a lot of times. I think it's useful to consider, especially if you're in a relationship with another depressed person and or another mentally ill person and you're both dealing with this. It's useful to think about, like, how those things interact with each other, and it might not always go so great. Like, I had a partner about a year and a half ago who also had depression, and when he was depressed, he was like you. Like, he wanted distance, he didn't want to be touched, he didn't like sexy sensations at that time. And I am sort of the opposite. Like, I really need to feel connected to my partner, and sex is a part of that. So, like, whenever we were depressed at the same time, it was pretty rough. Like, we found each other very frustrating, and it was really hard to sort of find, like, a middle ground that felt okay for both of us. And I guess if I had stayed in that relationship for longer, we might have figured out a compromise to that. But we broke up, so can't help you with that one.
I also think it could be useful to explore stuff like sexting in those moments. You know, that might have been something that, I mean, knowing both of you, probably couldn't abridge the gap with that. But for someone in a similar situation,
right?
That might kind of split the difference, more or less.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on my depression, sometimes I can engage in that way and sometimes not. I like it because it's an accessible way to feel sexy.
Yeah.
But I can do it alone. I don't have to worry about constantly falling back to this, like, flat affect that can come with depression. I don't have to worry about, like, do I look like a fucking weirdo? Why is it taking me so long to think of these words? Why is everything so much harder?
Yeah.
It's okay that it takes me an extra few minutes to figure out the next thing to say, right? Yeah. No one can see my face when inside this feels great, but outside I look like I'm bored out of my fucking mind. And, like, it's fine.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a lot more low pressure.
Yeah. There are also low pressure sexual things you can do in person if you're together. Like, the one that jumped to mind for me immediately is watching porn together and jerking off together, because you're not looking at each other or communicating. You're looking at the porn, but you're still having this sort of shared sexual experience. So it can kind of bridge the gap if you're, like, wanting intimacy but also not wanting it.
Yeah.
We got a bunch of listener questions for this episode. I think we've actually, like, addressed a lot of them. But one of them that I thought was really interesting was about being a depressed dom. Because, like, I've been talking from the perspective of a depressed sub, which is, like, kind of a different thing. Like, you can, I mean, not to equate subs with bottoms, but there is a lot of overlap there. And when you're depressed, you can, like, still receive sensation and have stuff done to you. And it won't necessarily take that much out of you. I mean, I'm speaking for myself here, but I have a hard time even imagining how you would top or dom as a depressed person. Like, that's really difficult for me to envision because I have so little emotional and physical energy when I'm in that state. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about, like, depressed doms. What should they do?
I mean, first of all, I think it's really hard for you to just imagine topping and doming in general. Like, you're like, that seems so foreign to me. And I'm like, I have met you. That's fair.
You know me so well, friend.
I think, again, we talked about, right, accessing these states or planning for these states when you're outside of them. We touched on that a little bit, but I think that's really, really valuable. Because you don't want to think about depression when you're feeling good. But that's the best time to plan for being depressed.
Yeah.
And I think doing the same as a dom, especially partnering with, if you have a submissive that you are either partnered with or play regularly with, partner with them and see what kind of service they can provide for you when you're depressed and in what ways that would be valuable. and what kind of, you know, maybe it's making sure you have the food that you need and can eat in those moments, or maybe it's just checking in, or maybe it's picking up some of the slack on whatever your job is, mm-hmm. so you have to worry a little bit less about it. I also think it's valuable to sit down, again, when you're feeling good, right? If you're someone who experiences hypomania, maybe even then, mm-hmm. and come up with a list of self-directed tasks for your submissive. The kind of tasks and assignments that can be really time-consuming and can really get them invested in it, and that you don't have to do shit for. like, go make them write you a dirty story. Mm. Or have them research something you've always wanted to learn about and then teach it to you. Mm-hmm. Anything that can keep them occupied and keep them accessing this, like, subby space without interacting with you.
Yeah.
I think can be a really useful way to kind of split the balance there. Mm-hmm. And not just drop everything, especially if you're in an ongoing dynamic, because that can be rough for both of you, right? Mm-hmm. And I know for myself, even if I'm feeling apathetic or if I'm feeling like I don't have the energy to do anything, sometimes I want to access that subby space.
Yes.
And connect with that part of myself. And I imagine that that experience is pretty similar for dominance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's probably similarly valuable to have really low impact ways to access that space.
Yeah, I think that's really, really good and useful advice. And it has me thinking about how, like, service in general, as it relates to DS, can be a really useful tool in terms of depression. Because, like, as we've talked about on this show many times, service can be done by DOMs or subs for each other. For me, like, I know when I'm really depressed, I have this overwhelming sense of not deserving anything, or that I'm a burden on the people I love. And when I have this, like, established DS dynamic that's structured in certain ways, my partner is able to do things for me when I'm depressed that I might not be able to accept if we weren't in a DS dynamic, because I might mm-hmm. feel like I was overburdening him. Like, he's able to maybe, like, send me food or, like, read to me or do other things that help alleviate my depression. And I'm more able to accept it because I am aware that he enjoys that role and that that is part of our relationship dynamic and part of our DS agreement. And so it feels a little bit less pressure-y than it might if a vanilla partner was, like, trying to do those things for me, in which case I might be like, well, I don't fucking deserve it, so why are you even trying?
Yeah. Yeah, it's... there are some tricks to accepting help. It is hard.
It is so hard. Yeah, I've found it really helpful if I'm, like, complaining about not deserving something or not feeling worthy of something. Often my partner just says, like, be good, or, like, listen to me, baby girl. And that dominance, like, him dropping into that dominance for a moment really kind of puts me in my place and, like, kind of makes me accept whatever he's trying to give me. And it's really quite a gift.
We went to this panel together, you and I, at mm-hmm. Woodhull.
Yes.
Where they talked a lot about this. And my friend Andy said some really smart stuff, because mm-hmm. they always do. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they talked about was how in their moments of anxiety, having a dominant say it's okay is way more valuable, or their dominant specifically, mm-hmm. is way more valuable to them than hearing it from anyone else or including their own brain. Because mm-hmm. it's like, no, this person is in charge. I trust them to be in charge. I put them in charge.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who is in this place above me that I've put them, where they clearly understand all of these things, they're saying mm-hmm. it's okay. So it must be, right? And it mm-hmm. creates this kind of safe bubble for them.
It is so wonderful. It is such a gift. And it's something that I'm really lucky to have in my dynamic, because, like, often when I'm anxious or depressed, I will have the urge to ask my partner, am I safe? And it's kind of a weird question. I wouldn't ask it of pretty much anyone else in my life, because they would be like, what the hell are you talking about? Of course you're safe. Nobody's actively attacking you right now. But my partner, mm-hmm. I think, understands what I mean on a deeper level by that question, which is just that something inside me feels unsafe in some way due to my mental state. And so he always tells me, you're safe. I'm keeping you safe. I'm going to take care of you. And hearing that from him, yeah, totally. Like Andy said, like, there are very few other people who would make me feel like that is actually true when they say it. And this is one of the things that's so beautiful about DS and about kink.
Yeah, because this dynamic is built on this incredibly intense trust that you have for this other person,
mm-hmm.
right? And this kind of allows you to play into this, right? And you're able to trust this person more than your own brain in a moment where you yes. know that your brain is misleading you.
Exactly.
Right? You can know it and not believe it and not feel it,
mm-hmm.
but trust this other person to be telling you the truth.
Yep. Yep. Oh, man, I'm going to cry. That's so
beautiful. I know, I can see it. I'm watching it happen.
Okay, well, thank you for joining us for this somewhat heavy episode of the Dildorks. I hope it gave you...
I'll be making dick jokes again next week, I promise.
I have been Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice. Where is your stuff?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks, and we're at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app, which is probably what you did to get here. But I want you to go back and do it again and rate and review us and tell us how great we are, because it makes me smile. If you want to continue to support us in even bigger and better ways, go to patreon.com/thedildorks. Toss a couple of bucks our way. Help us keep doing what we're doing. That money is literally feeding me this week, so thank you.
Thank you. I also wanted to say we switched to podcast hosts a couple times recently. We switched to S3, and then we switched again to Simplecast. It's been a hell of a time running the Dildorks back end over here. So everything should be fine. My partner is a tech daddy, so he helped me with all that stuff. But if you do notice anything weird, feel free to tweet at us or email us and let me know about that. I know that the show was like not working right on Google Podcasts for a couple days, but then it seems to be back up. But yeah, if you notice anything strange, just let me know. I'll try to fix it up. Thank you so much to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye. Stay with me. 7:45 on the nose.
I gotta do a content.
Go do your thing. But we were talking, and I was like, we're doing a podcast on depression and sex. And I was talking about how, like, I was in a bad mood, and I had to podcast, and I wasn't sure how it was gonna go. And I was like, but we're doing one on depression and sex, so, like, at least it's, like, timely, it makes sense, and whatever. And I'm like, it'll fit with my mood. And he's like, yeah, you know. And I'm like, I think it's mostly just gonna be an episode of Kate talking about crying and me talking about how I trust no one. So
that's every episode of our show.
I know. But I was like, this is just gonna be the episode where Kate has all of her feelings and I have none.
I'll try to pull some out of you. We'll see.
Oh boy. And then when she had me tied up, we were like trying to figure stuff out, and she laughed and like moved a little bit and was like, I could tickle you. And I like squeaked, and she's like, no, we didn't negotiate that, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, I mean, you can. I'm just gonna scream a lot. And she was like, oh, great. So we have some really candid pictures of her tickling me and me freaking the fuck out while tied to a tree.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
I love her.
Update, my headphones were attached to my computer with a wire.
Yeah, that's interesting how that works.
Yeah, wild.
Today, we're not just telling you this for no reason. We're not just announcing our diagnoses on the show. I'm not articulate right now.
I started just depressed.
Yes. Yeah, okay.
Oh, shit! I have 3 diagnosed mental illnesses, too!
Oh, wow. Yay.
I thought I had 2, but I forgot about dysphoria. Mm. Which counts.
Yeah. Yikes.
Fuck. Okay. I forgot about dysphoria sentences I never thought I'd say. This episode is more bloop than episode.
That's fine.
We're only 8 minutes in. All right.